Check. Whoa, that works. Good morning. That was one of the sorriest good mornings I've ever had. All right, let me try that again. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, that's much better. Bart, I'm so proud of you, Laura, and for what you're doing. I am an old rascal because I knew both of their granddads. I had many classes with Thomas B. Warren, Bart's grandfather. And knew Brother Roy Lanier. He was a pilot and a lot of other things, a great Bible teacher and writer. So it goes back a long ways. Now look, I don't teach in a coat. And the reason I'm wearing this is because your spring is really funny in Kentucky. It's cold today. How many of you find this weather to be a little cold? Hands up. Let me see where you are. Okay, I find it to be a little cold, but I'm glad to be here. Came yesterday from Knoxville, where one of the elders died, where I was preaching in Knoxville at the time I was going to graduate school. The reason I was going to graduate school was because of Thomas B. Warren and similar people who told us that we needed to get PhDs in philosophy. So yesterday, one of the elders died at age 96 and a half. From the time that Joyce and I were working there. So we went to Knoxville from Jackson, Tennessee first yesterday, and then we drove in here last night. But we're glad to be here. My wife, Joyce, is right there. It's my first wife. All right, we've been married for 46 years. 44 of them have been happy. Those first two are a little rough. All right, let's say, did anybody else in here willing to admit that? The first 2 years of marriage is a little rough. I don't know if you're willing to admit that or not. Okay, so good to see the CYC group up here. Glad to have you here. Thank you for Nick and for his work here. And I'm glad to be here. I got a new app today. Whoa, I can't preach because I don't get to play with this app. But I get to advance the slides on my phone here. It also has solitaire. No, okay, and it has some things on here. So what do I know about the South Green Church? Well, I was here about 10 years ago. I was asking Matthew Higginbotham. Do you remember Steve Higginbotham? I was asking Matthew, how old was he whenever they moved from here? And he doesn't remember exactly, but he was somewhere in middle school. And I have him in class now, and he's engaged to a girl. So that's a good thing. Okay, but he's engaged, and I love him very much for for what he stands for. Steve was preaching here when I was here before. So I'm assuming that was 10 years ago or so. I don't really know exactly when I was here before. I do remember that Steve and I tried to play golf on one of the local courses here, and there were some really aggressive Canadian geese. I sliced the ball off into the woods, and I thought I was going to die because a mother goose attacked me over there. Okay, so if what you read about mother goose in the rhyme story is not true, they're wicked. Okay, so, but anyway, I got out of there alive. Anyway, I think it was a state park course somewhere near here. It was beautiful. I remember that. So, enough of that story is reminiscing. No, I ain't through yet. Bart, is he the one, Joyce, that had the big wheel and our daughter had the tricycle? Okay, so in the student center at UT Martin, Bart had a big wheel that he would ride around. He was a little rascal. And then Jenny had our oldest daughter. She had a tricycle. So sometimes, you know, they swap. But Bart was pretty fond of that big wheel. And it was really cool to think about that. I'm sorry for what is viewed from this side of eternity as being the untimely passing of his parents. But those are great memories that I treasure. And we'll look forward to being reunited someday. Okay, so let's talk about Jesus this week. That's what I want to do. Lives focused on Jesus. So somebody says, hey, what's going on this week at South Green? Well, the answer is, well, we're going to be talking about Jesus. What are we going to be doing tonight? Well, we're talking about Jesus. We're going to be doing Wednesday night. Well, we're still talking about Jesus. And the reason why we want to do that is because that's where your focus should be. I'm old enough that I can remember the Polaroid cameras, you know, the ones where you take a picture and then there was like a 3 or 4 step process. You do this and you do this and you pull out this and then you hold this for like 3 days. Okay, and then after that period of time, you open it up and you say, did it take? Okay, and then your next question is it in focus? Well, one of the things that happens in Tennessee and Kentucky and everywhere else is that we lose our focus on Jesus. Kind of like some of the ball teams that are playing. Some lost that you thought were going to win, some won you thought was going to lose. And one of the problems, or one of the things that causes that is that There might be a 96-year-old grandmother at Loyola who decides that she's going to be, you know, like the PR person for the entire team. And this little team from Chicago looks now, you know, pretty good, you know, because they've got something to believe in and something to focus on. In the same way, you and I have that too. So when we think about why maybe many of our congregations are not growing as they should, or why we have lost our zeal for evangelism, one of the things is we've lost our focus. We don't know what to look at anymore. Now, this is a Bible class hour, so I'm free to ask you questions. And guess what? I will, because I've taught at Fried Hardeman for 37 years, and I've seen audiences a lot more resistant than yours. Okay, so what I want to do then is I want to ask you, why should we focus on Jesus? All right, this is a Bible class. You can talk. Why should we focus on Jesus?
He's our hope.
All right, he's our hope. Thank you. Okay, you got a brother, and your brother is right there, and y'all don't look like each other. All right, but sorry, the last name is like Pitt something. What is it?
Pitcock.
Okay, you got to remember that. He's one of the elders. Okay, and so there. All right, so when I ask you that, brother, because he's our hope, what else you got for me? Why focus on Jesus? He's our Savior. What else?
He's the author and finisher of our faith.
I've read that somewhere. All right, who else? He's God's son. What else?
He's our propitiation for our sins.
Whoa, if I knew what propitiation meant, I'd do that. Oh, yes, he is. He is the wrath offering for our sins to make us at peace with God again. What else you got? Why Jesus? Hey, guys, can y'all talk? Y'all in English? Am I speaking English? Or what do you think, Allie? Allie 1, Allie 2. I met two Allies. What do you think? You been to church before? Okay, all right. What about it, Emily? What do you think?
He died for us.
All right, he died for us. I like that. Give me some more.
He's our example.
He's what?
Our example.
He's our example. Yep, yep. 1 Peter chapter 2. What else?
He's our
media. Say that again. Something about anything other than Jesus? Oh, I like that. I like that. And you said he's our mediator? Oh, 1 Timothy chapter 2. What else?
He's our Messiah.
Ooh, that's good. He's the anointed one. He's our Messiah. Okay, so for all these reasons and many more, this is it. All right, if that's true, that we understand all of that, then why are the churches of Christ not growing as we should? Let me say it again. If we understand all of that, why are we not growing as we should?
2 Timothy 4:3.
What's that? Okay, but part of the problem is why they believe a lie rather than the truth is the fact that they don't have much basis to understand what the truth is. Because as a whole, this generation doesn't have the same exposure to general Bible knowledge that my mom and dad did. My mother and my sister taught me when I was very little. Remember those little gospel advocate cards about the spig? Okay, and before I could read, you know, my mother and my sister made sure that I could pretty much memorize those and say them in class. And my mother thought that if I was not prepared for physics or chemistry or whatever, or if I was not prepared for Bible, it would be better not to be prepared for physics or chemistry. Because that was back in the days when you could get like 150 questions, you know, that you had to read in order to get ready for the next class period. I mean, we actually did that. It was the days before Bible Bowl. And I noticed this generation is very, very intelligent. They're also smart about the Bible. And you look at all those kids at CYC and you think, there's a great future here. But one of the reasons why it's easy to be tickled is because you don't know, you know, you don't have a basis of judgment because you don't know the Bible as you should. It'd be easier for me to be led astray. I had a question from a student that I was studying briefly last night about the book of Habakkuk and theodicy. Bart, you know about this. And this student wanted me to recommend some sources. Well, you know, I just discovered even at my age that I didn't know much about that. So I had to do some search on the internet last night to find out some stuff about the book of Habakkuk and theodicy. But I know some of it now. It's like, so therefore, when we talk about that, it's lies focused on Jesus. Now, I push that button right there. Whoa. Okay, and I don't know what you think Jesus looked like, but I am pretty sure that that's probably not it. But Jesus maybe is a little too white here. I don't know, you know, the shape of his nose or the color of his skin, but he was Jewish. What do you think Jesus looked like, somebody? What do you think? What?
He looked like a Jew.
All right. And therefore, whenever we think about Jesus, you know, we try to picture him in our minds, but we want to focus on him. And so here's what we're doing this week. This hour, why Jesus? And then if I get to it, everything that I want to get to this hour, the next lesson will be Jesus in the Old Testament, and then Jesus and his personal ministry, Jesus and his church, Jesus and my salvation, and Jesus and my life. Notice anything common about all that? Jesus. That has everything to do with everything, and this is the lesson through Wednesday night. That's not for this hour. Okay, but this is the lesson through Wednesday night, so that's what we're going to be doing this week. Now, this one is why Jesus? And I've asked you that question already. Why should Jesus be at the center as opposed to somebody else? And you told me. You gave me more than a dozen reasons why he should be at the center, and so he's really important. Now, when I think about why Jesus, there are some things that mean some pictures. I'm not into iconography. I don't believe in icons, and I don't believe, you know, in holy statues and that sort of stuff. But we do have this little thing in our house. We have both a painting and a little short statue of it. It's not to be worshipped, of course, but it's reminding us of the fact that we were that guy in the blue jeans there, all messed up and dirty and filthy and broken. And there he is, probably a sweaty t-shirt. I'm sure he doesn't smell good. And in this particular picture, Jesus is holding him up from the back. Notice in the man's hand, there is a hammer in his right hand and a big old nail in the left hand. Now, whenever you start thinking personally about who Jesus was, it'll make more sense to you than thinking about him theoretically. When you think about him theoretically, you say, oh, well, yes, he was the Messiah, he was the Savior, and all that stuff. And when that really comes to land in your own lap, whenever that time comes, it'll make a difference. Now, I guess you could say that year for us started in 1993 and ended in 2000. Even though at that time in 93, I was already 50 years old, but our oldest daughter got messed up on drugs and alcohol for 7 years, and we just seemed to be not able to control that. I was telling Bart that I really needed this thing because I needed to control something. I couldn't control my wife, and I couldn't control my children, and I certainly can't control my sons-in-law. All right, so there's a lot of things that I just cannot control. All right, and one of the things that was important to Joyce and me is to come to understand that now that our daughter was 18 years old, we adopted her. At the time that Bart was little, she is a year older than Bart. But we adopted her at that time because we wanted children, and because we felt that God wanted us to have children, and because we thought she was a gift from God. So whenever West Tennessee Agape let us have her, it was pretty cool, you know, because it was a great and wonderful day. I was looking at pictures at it just recently. And then just about 6 weeks ago, that adopted daughter adopted a son. And that's cool to see your adopted child adopt a child. So she made it through the 7 years, of course, but they were not easy because that was the time that we felt completely powerless. The first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable. That's the first step. I mean, the real first step out of the 12 steps. Well, Jenny needed to understand that, but we needed to understand that too. We could no longer control her. I came from the generation that you made children mind. Y'all know what that means, to make a child mind? Okay, raise your hand if you do. All right, I came from that generation. We could do it. Why? We weighed more than they did. Okay, and there was a way to make your children mind. And you thought that they were minding you on the inside if they were minding you on the outside, but that wasn't necessarily true. Just because you make a mind on the outside does not mean that their mind is with Jesus. So there was a while there that she struggled, although now she has 18 years of sobriety and everything is going better. But that came to mean a lot to us. So what do you think Jesus looks like? Well, this ain't it. Newsweek has this picture here of Jesus. And first of all, he's kind of wormy. I don't think that Jesus was wormy. Okay, he was not a little weakling. You know, he was not a guy that you could blow over with a feather. You know, he was a strong guy. And why was he a strong guy? Well, he's a carpenter. And a carpenter's son. My dad was a carpenter. That's the days when you really drove nails. You didn't go, you know what I mean? You really drove nails. And the arms would get big because of the muscles of driving those nails. I would watch my dad, and the muscle would just jump in his arm when he was nailing something, you know, maybe a rafter or something. He was nailing, and you could see how strong he was. That ain't Jesus. I mean, Jesus here is weak, and he's white, and he's maybe a little bit effeminate. No, that's not him. So when I'm thinking about Jesus, this thing keeps... Okay, views of Jesus from some major religions. All right, if I wanted to consider some in the Islamic faith, then I would see that Jesus was a prophet. They admit that he was a prophet because it's in the Quran that he was a prophet. I mean, he's a prophet in the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And there he is. He's not the last prophet because they would view Muhammad be the last prophet. But nonetheless, he is a prophet. And that seems to be something that you could say, well, that's pretty cool. I mean, he is a prophet. I mean, we should at least appreciate that. And then there's some in Judaism who are no longer trying to avoid the subject of Jesus. Because sometimes he can be advantageous to the Jewish faith because they can say, hey, he was Jewish, as was said by the brother here earlier. Hey, he was Jewish. Therefore, he was an honorable Jew. We don't think that he was the Son of God, but he was an honorable Jew. And then some in the Hindu faith view him as being a virtuous man. Because virtue, as many of you know, is a big thing in Hinduism. All right, and so when you talk about Jesus being virtuous, he was a man full of goodness and virtue. And then what about the Buddhist? Some of them even view Jesus as being a bodhisattva, which would be an enlightened man. You ever seen the picture of the emaciated Buddha? And he's skin and bones and all that stuff because he's denying himself food and other stuff. And then once he becomes enlightened, then you see that he's a pretty good-sized boy. Okay, and so when people look at me and they say, Brother Al, are you overweight? And I say, no, I'm just enlightened. Okay, so when you think about Buddha here, he's an enlightened man. Then finally, the Dalai Lama, I think I have, abbreviated a lot of these slides, but here's the Dalai Lama, and he's talking about the karma of the gospel, and of course, being a Buddhist, which is the Dalai Lama represents a subsect of the Buddhist faith. He likes the transfiguration of Jesus in Matthew 17. He thought Jesus was a man of karma or the presence of God. He thought that Jesus was a man of faith, and he thought that Jesus was a man of empathy. Now, I've said all of that to say, wow, that's pretty cool. A lot of major religions out there honoring Jesus. And so I'm going to ask you a question. Is it enough that they have honored him in these ways? Now, me and this phone may not be getting along. Okay, hold on a second. Okay, now let's back up and look at that again. All right, there are ways that they want to honor Jesus. Is that good enough for you? What about it, Nick? Good enough for you? Well, what sort of a narrow-minded person are you, brother? You know, I mean, that's honorable. And if Jesus is like, why is it not enough? Jesus was more than that. And therefore, it's impossible to just blend all these religions together. You can't just blend them all together and make succotash. I mean, you can't just blend them all together and make a casserole. Listen, I'm a good old boy. And that means that casseroles are suspect. Why? Because you cannot see the meat. You know, and you don't know what kind of meat is in there, and you don't know whether or not it's okay to eat a dish with no meat. Now, some of you people are near vegetarians, or you are vegetarians, or you could make a meal out of just a plate of vegetables. I'm going to tell you, I'm not one of those guys. What I need to see is I'm a carnivore. I'm an omnivore. I'm about every kind of vore that you can think of. And when I think about Jesus here, I'm just kind of wondering, is it enough? And you can't just blend it all together. Why? Why can you not just blend all these religions together? They don't what?
They don't have the truth.
They don't have the truth. Very good. Sounds a little narrow-minded, but nonetheless true. All right. You know, to the rest of the world, that sounds narrow-minded, doesn't it? All right. And we live in a period of time known as what? Post what? Postmodernism. And actually, these guys are not even millennials. These guys up here are homelanders. Because millennials started back in the late 1990s. And so now even the millennials have passed, and so we now got a new group of Generation Z or Homelanders or whatever you guys want to be referred to. I didn't ask you before church. You know, but that's, you know, this age. And you know what? They don't believe in absolute truth as a whole. And you know what? They're very tolerant. And you know what that means? You look at all that stuff, it means I'm okay, you're okay. from the 1980s. I'm okay, you're okay. Let's just go with it, because they lost their view of truth. And now it's just a matter of what can you tolerate or what can you accept? Is this enough? All right, let me give you a basic argument for the deity of Christ, which actually came from Roy Deaver and from Thomas B. Warren. All right, and Bart, I'm going to ask you to do the honor to read this, please. All right, let's see what you learned from your granddad. What does that mean?
If the things that he can do or did, the things said of him, the things said by him, the things done by him, they're beyond human ability to do, then he must be the divine Son of God, both in claims that he made and things that he did. And so if those things are true, then he must be the Son of God.
All right. So it has to do with his person and work. I sometimes abbreviate this for my evidences student as the P&W argument. If the person and work of Jesus Christ... Now, your job then is to show that the person and work of Jesus Christ were beyond what created beings can do. And if you can do that, everything is good. I'm surprised, Bart, that I'm even talking to you, because I was a math major when I went to Fried Hardeman, and I was not a Bible major, and I signed up for a class in ethics under your granddad. Okay, and... So he said, read this book from Carl F. H. Henry, Ethics, and study class notes. Well, I studied class notes, and I didn't study the book much. On the first test I ever had with your granddad, I made a 68. That was the second highest grade in the class. And at that time, I was convinced that Brother Warren was not a very godly man. Okay, because he was really hard. All right, But also, as a math major, it helped to turn my thinking around about, I grew up in the church, and I was proud of my upbringing in Middle Tennessee, about 50 miles south of Nashville. Everything was pretty good about that, but I really wasn't sold on the church, and I wanted to go in the Air Force. And except for a physical exam, I didn't go in the Air Force. But it was nonetheless true that the first time I took that class, I was thinking, wow, there must be more of this Christianity stuff than I thought. Because I kind of thought that our answers were a little simplistic and a little regurgitatory. That means, well, you've learned this, spit it back. You know, and I kind of thought, well, there wasn't much original that we could do to defend the faith. And Brother Warren's class helped me to see that, you know, I was missing a lot. I was just missing a lot. So what I need to do then is to show that. Now, how can I do that? Well, there's more than one way. But one way, if you want to use the way that Jesus used himself... Use John 5. This is the passage in the Bible where Jesus talks more about himself than any other passage. This is the passage in the Bible where Jesus talks about himself more than in any other passage with regard to who he is and what he's doing here on earth. Can I say that one more time? If you wanted to go to a passage where Jesus addressed this more, go to John 5. All right, now I also teach my students, can you remember the Christian Contemporary Music Association? Well, they may not always can remember those 4 points right there, but they can remember the Christian Contemporary Music Association because they listen to music, and I just made that up. I don't reckon there is one. All right, but CCMA will help you to remember these 4 points. Now, what are the 4 points? Well, from verse 19, if the character of Jesus is beyond created beings. Number 2, if he's got outstanding credentials. Number 3, if his mission is superlative. Number 4, if he has authority beyond anybody who's ever walked on earth, then he is the person whose person and work is beyond that of created beings, and therefore he is God. Now, I'm not just saying that he is the Son of God, and I honor you when you say that he's the Son of God, but I'm not just arguing that he's the Son of God here. I'm arguing that he was God. Do you hear the difference? The difference between the Son of God and being God. Being the Son of God, he does claim to be the Son of God. Open your New Testament to the first verse, Matthew 1 and verse 1, and let's find out a short genealogy of Jesus, the shortest genealogy of Jesus that's in the Bible. Matthew 1 and verse 1. Guys, I'm going to get you to help me up here, okay, because I need help. All right, you got it. What's your name?
Jake.
Hi, Jake. Will you read Matthew 1:1? He was, that's pretty short, isn't it? The Son of David and the Son of Abraham. I just got my spit test back. You know, the ancestry.com. Joyce gave it to me for Christmas because she'd also had done this thing and wanted to find out where I was from. Well, there were some surprises on there, but essentially, if it were possible to go through my ancestries, who apparently came from Scotland or Ireland in 1720, and they landed somewhere in East Tennessee or North Alabama, if you were to trace that back as far as you could, well, you could abbreviate all of that by saying, in this case, Jesus was son of God. He was the son of David and the son of Abraham. By the way, they didn't say the great, 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 great grandson of. They just said son of. Because if he was in your lineage, then you're his son. So he's the son of. All right. Now, being the son of course, it's important that Jesus was the son of. But there was something that he was before he was the son of. Before he was the son of David, before he was the son of Abraham, before he was the son of God, before he was the son of man, who was he? He was. And what was his other name? John 1 and 1. What does it say? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was God. In Greek, logos or logos, depending how you were taught to say it. But let's say that it's logos, and that's who he was before he was ever the son. So when I'm going to make this point here, I'm not just going to say that he was the son of God. I'm going to say he was God. Now, as we have time then, we will look at his character, and we will say, well, how can you tell somebody's character even today? Well, it's a little different now with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all this stuff, because people can put stuff out there about somebody's character like in a millisecond. You know, if you can look at Google and you can get 20 million hits on a topic that you're researching in a second, well, imagine how fast it takes to get some information out there, whether it be true or whether it be false, on somebody's character. And by the way, when you hit that send button, you know, there's not an unsend button. There's the send button, and then there's the send button, because you can't delete it after you send it or after you post it. It's there. You can say, well, I changed my mind and I'm going to unpost it. Well, how many people saw it while it was posted? So in this case, how do you know what a person's character is? Well, you better know something besides just Facebook. You better know something then besides, like, for instance, what students might say about you on ratemyprofessor.com, you know, because they're going to have some ideas about, you know, what kind of teacher you are by looking on there, and that may or may not be true. But if I want to know who Jesus is, I want to look for myself and see what he did and see what he said and then see what others said about him. So that's what I'd want to do. And in doing that then, what did he do? All right, Acts 1, 1 and 2. Guys, I'm going to ask the youth group to help me here. When I go to a passage, you read it off the screen. All right, which one of you will do it? All of you will, won't you? Okay, what's your name?
Caleb.
All right, read that, Caleb.
In my former good,
Theophilus.
I raged about all that Jesus was going to do and to teach until the day he was taken up to heaven after giving instructions
So what does that tell you about the writer of Acts? In my former book, what does that tell you? He wrote an earlier book, and that would be the Gospel of Luke. In my former book, I wrote about all that Jesus began to do and to teach. And therefore, the life of Jesus can be summed up in what he did and what he taught. By the way, which is more important, what you teach or what you do? What's more important, what you teach or what you do? What about over here, guys? What's more important? Why?
Because people will see and you'll be an example, a positive or a negative example of if you're living for Jesus.
Mm-hmm. The guy who died at age 96 and a half, funeral we went to yesterday in Knoxville, he taught a Bible class until he was 92. He and his wife were married for 70 years. He was one of the best elders under whom I've served. The only congregation I know of with two elders where they actually got along. I mean, they actually got along. I usually teach three or more elders or go preach somewhere else. You know, because it's too hard. One of those will be dominant. This was not true in Knoxville, Tennessee, because this guy and another guy who was there yesterday in a wheelchair by the name of Joe, they learned to work together so that neither one of them was dominant. Wasn't that cool? And so when we think about Jesus, well, what did he do? I'm not through yet. All right, so let's go next. Emily, will you?
You know what has happened throughout Judea, beginning in Galilee after the baptism that John preached, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and power, and how he went around doing good and healing all who were under the power of the devil, because God was with him.
You read real good. You might read better than your daddy. Jackie, are you back there? I was just kidding. Okay, so then Acts chapter 10, verses 37 through 38. All right, what was said about him? I need to vamoose and get out of Dodge here. Matthew 7, 28 and 29. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as the teachers of the law. What did other people say about him? In John 7, these temple guards that are hired by the Sanhedrin, the group of 70 in the Jewish high court. The temple guards are their police force. The Sanhedrin send them to go arrest Jesus, and they listen to Jesus for a while, and they come back empty-handed. And so their bosses are saying, why did you come back empty-handed? He says, well, no one ever spoke the way this man does. This is so powerful, especially when you consider police officers who are sent to arrest him, who will not arrest him after they hear him. And then his credentials. Well, I wish we had time to do this, some justice, but let's see what we can do. Here are seven signs, or seven of the credentials of Jesus. Let me tell you what you don't want to do. You don't want to go to a doctor for a surgery and look up on the wall and see that he's a graduate of the Kentucky School of Correspondence Surgery. Okay, you know, how did you learn to do surgery? Internet. Okay, so I don't think so. I don't want to, you know, you don't want a surgeon to look inside of you and say to the nurse, do you recognize any of this? Okay, you don't want that. You want credentials, and that's the reason to believe. Somebody's going to cut on you. You need to believe. All right, here are seven. Let's see how many you can remember. All right, number one, his preexistence. If you knew these seven things and one verse for each of them, you could teach somebody about Jesus anywhere in the world. Sometimes I've been in a situation where I didn't know that I was going to preach, and the local preacher said, will you preach? Well, here's a go-to sermon. Why? Because everybody in the world needs to know this. I've done this in Africa and Europe and other places, and Bahamas. Why? Because here's a sermon that everybody needs. Everybody needs to know why to believe in Jesus, and here are seven signs. Number one is preexistence. John 1. If you knew that in one verse, you could do all of these. Number two is virgin birth. If you knew one verse, Matthew 1 and verse 21 would be good. Number three, he lived a perfect life. 1 Peter 2, 22 and 23. He died and was buried. Matthew 27, 51 or Mark 15, 39. It's going to be, you know, next to the last chapter of just about any gospel. And the resurrection. Well, how would I find the resurrection passages? This is so good because you can look at the last chapter, the first verse of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and there it is. Last chapter, first verse, the resurrection. And John is the next to the last chapter, the first verse. Now, you can remember this. A lot of people say, oh, I can't remember the Bible. Well, how did, I've had students over the years say, oh, I just can't memorize memory verse tests. And I say, well, how'd you get here? And they said, well, I walked from the dorm. And I said, well, how'd you learn that? Well, I memorized it. Okay. How did you drive here from Jackson? I drove in the car. And how'd you learn the path from here to Jackson, from Jackson to here? Memorized it. All right. They can give you all sorts of sports facts. They can give you all sorts of other facts. They can look at a bolt and tell you that it's a 7/16 or if it's a 10 metric. You know, they'll look at it and they'll tell you exactly what it is. And yet they'll say, I can't memorize the Bible. Women know the Latin flowers of every flower in Kentucky, the Latin names for every flower. And they say, can't memorize the Bible. Now, what's going on funny here? The funny thing is, you hadn't been motivated to memorize the Bible. So if you know that the resurrection is in the last chapter of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and the next last chapter beginning in verse 1, then you can find it wherever you are. And then finally, his ascension is only in Acts 1 and verse 9. And then finally, what's he currently doing? Well, he's reigning as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. You could do probably the clearer one would be 1 Timothy 6 and verse 15. So if you did these seven things with one passage, you don't need a Jill Miller film strips. You don't need Tisdall's charts. You don't need open Bible study. If you happen to be without those things, if you know this, you can teach somebody about Jesus wherever you are and whatever you are doing. Even right next to you, where somebody sat and you were hoping nobody would sit on the airplane next to you. And there they are, right next to you. And then before you know it, you're talking about Jesus. So that's how important this is, I think. And this would be the seven signs of Jesus. Now, guys, hit the letter B up there. The letter B. Hit the letter B, please. Do you have this in PowerPoint? You don't have it in PowerPoint. Well, if you had it in PowerPoint, you hit the letter B, it blanks it out. So I don't know how you would blank it out up there. But all right, I guess you guys are going to have to cheat. Look at me. Look at me. Okay, look at me. All right, what are the seven signs of Jesus? Number one, you're looking up there. Don't do it. That's where the devil is, up on that screen. Okay, number one. What's number one? His preexistence. What's number two? His virgin birth. What's number three? His perfect life. Number four is what? His death and burial. Number five is what? His resurrection. Number six is what? His ascension. Number seven is what? He reigns as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. There you go. If indeed, I'm not saying that everybody should be able to do this, but I'm going to say that more Christians should be able to do this than are now doing it. I'm not saying that everybody in church has to do a personal Bible study with somebody to go to heaven. I'm not saying that. But I want you to think about this. And here's what I want you to think about. If you had to trust the teaching about Jesus to a certain percentage of people in your congregation, what percentage would you trust to do that? I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about percentages. The South Green Church. Could 20% of you do it? Could 15% of you do it? Could 25% of you do it? On the basis of what I see here, I don't see any reason why at least 50% of you couldn't do it. And if you could do that, then you have the basis for growing. Look, growing a church is not rocket surgery. I know I mixed that up on purpose. It is not rocket surgery, okay? It's about, you have to do some of the things that you know that you need to do in order to grow. One of the things that is missing from many congregations where we go, so since I'm not a full-time preacher now, we get to go to a lot of different congregations of brothers and sisters in Christ. One of the things that you learn by doing that is that congregations as a whole do not have personal Bible studies going on. They don't have personal Bible studies going on. From the elders down. I'm not saying about this church because I love you and I haven't met all of you yet, but I'm saying as a whole, that's part of the problem. And you know what we do to grow? We sheep shuffle. Sheep shuffling means somebody gets upset at another congregation of the Church of Christ and they come to visit us. Well, are they welcome? Under most circumstances, yes. But I've also been on the receiving end of that, where some of our people get upset and they go somewhere else. That's why I call it sheep shuffling. With sheep shuffling, you're not actually bringing a lot of new people to Christ, but you're taking all the sheep that are out there and say, whoa, you go over there, and you go over here. Y'all got a lot of congregation of the Church of Christ in this part of Kentucky. We got a lot where I'm from in West Tennessee. So if somebody gets mad at one congregation, they can go 10 minutes somewhere else. Bart, I couldn't do it, but I like you anyway. But guess what? Class is over. So.